Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Tuesday, April 7th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Organizers Working to Add Flavor to Brewfest by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Hoping to draw in a broader crowd after a down year, this year's Yankee Homecoming Brewfest is being revamped to appeal to a more family-friendly crowd. While the details are still in the early phases, event organizers want to breathe new life into the event, which has been struggling. The plan is to encourage families to attend by hosting new activities while also featuring tents offering beer and other libations, along with music and food trucks. We're trying to encourage more people to want to come, Yankee Homecoming Vice President Jason LaCroix said. We feel that if they don't have to ditch their children or leave the families behind, it'll be better attended and there will be more for people to do. This year's Yankee Homecoming is scheduled from July 25th to August 2nd, operating with the theme Home Sweet Home. Brewfest serves as the kickoff party for the festivities. It is set to take place from 5 to 9 p.m. on July 25th at Cashman Park. The event is also one of the biggest fundraisers for Yankee Homecoming, with money raised going toward the annual fireworks show. We definitely need to garner it back up to its original status, LaCroix said of the renewed efforts and focus on the Brewfest. Last year, organizers were forced to reduce the contract for the fireworks show from $40,000 to $20,000 due to the lower-than-usual Brewfest fundraiser ticket demand. Sales have been slipping away for the past 5 years, and last year was pretty close to one of the lowest, LaCroix said. So we needed to change up with the times. Chamber of Commerce President Nancy Caswell said she thinks the organizers have a great vision and she's excited to see this new version of the fundraiser. Anything we can do to get behind it, we'll do, Caswell said, in terms of what can be expected this year. LaCroix said that folks still looking to enjoy some beers and other beverages will have over 20 sampling booths to visit. We also have a mocktail booth for people that want non-alcoholic options, LaCroix said. He said there will be live music and food trucks with more details still to come. We're still working on the kids' portion of it, LaCroix said. We're looking at possible inflatables or some just random games to play. At the same time as Brewfest, the Yankee Homecoming Competitive Cornhole Competition will be held in a fenced-off area. It's definitely something they can watch. He said there will be also be cornhole boards laid out for visitors to use, separate from the tournament. He stressed the need for volunteers. We estimate that the kickoff party is going to take about 30 volunteers to execute what we want to do. And we probably only have a handful at this point, 5 or 6, LaCroix said. And the need for volunteers stretches beyond Brewfest, he said. We need volunteers for a bunch of events, old-fashioned Sunday, family day, the parade, LaCroix said. Information on volunteering can be found at yankeehomecoming.com/volunteer/database. Lake Gardner Improvement Association, Amesbury Trails, Merge by Caitlin D. Amesbury. Amesbury's decades-old Lake Gardner Improvement Association has merged with Amesbury Trails to form Amesbury Outdoors with a goal of protecting and promoting outdoor spaces in the city. The creation of the new group, which will Have regular activities and oversee open space and trails in Amesbury came about when members of the Lake Gardner Improvement Association realized that the nonprofit had outgrown its old title. The association was founded with the intention to protect and save the lake, but eventually the group's work expanded far beyond its original scope, said Bruce McBrien, president of the former Lake Gardner Improvement Association, Inc., and president of Amesbury Outdoors. Some of that work involved the city's trail network, similar to the work done by the Amesbury Trails, an organization formed by a group of trail enthusiasts who wanted to better acquaint residents with local hiking and walking opportunities. Alongside having similar missions, the groups also had a similar membership, and eventually it was decided that two organizations should combine under a new name. Amesbury Trails was not a nonprofit. Lake Gardner Improvement Association was, and we were doing more things with the trails, McBrien said. And it became very clear that the entity that was the Lake Gardner Improvement Association had outgrown itself substantially, and our work was not reflected in the name. He also said it became clear to him that the name of the original group was keeping residents from getting involved, as it appeared the nonprofit was only focused on the lake. It was one of those aha moments where I had never realized that the name Lake Gardner Improvement Association had been limited in more ways than I had ever imagined, McBrien said. Amesbury Trails, which was founded in 2014, reports 6 members. Lake Gardner, founded in 2000, reported assets of $15,457 in its 2024 filing with the Internal Revenue Service. Amesbury Trails founding members Ken Aspala said he was happy to see the two groups merge as it will expand the focus of both organizations. I think the name change is important because becoming Amesbury Outdoors brings other things into the umbrella of the group, other than just trails and just the lake, he said. Recently, Amesbury Outdoors began soft launching its name and existence, generating renewed attention from residents, McBrien said. We're seeing increased interest already, and that's really what we're hoping for, he said. We'd like to have more people engaged, interested, involved. McBrien also said the existence of a group like Amesbury Outdoors is important because it can offer residents a chance to engage in peaceful activities to offset the stress of daily life. Just spending 10 minutes immersed in nature can immeasurably lower your stress levels, he said. And to me, that's significant, especially in the challenging times in which we live. We need to find those places to find peace. SJC to weigh DeSaglio's audit lawsuit, by Christian M. Wade, State House reporter, Boston. The state's highest court will hear arguments next month in a legal fight stemming from state auditor Diana DeSaglio's push to force legislative leaders to comply with a voter-approved audit. The Supreme Judicial Court has scheduled oral arguments for May 6th in Attorney General Andrea Campbell's motion to dismiss DeSaglio's lawsuit against House Speaker Ron Mariano and Senate President Karen Spilka that asked the court to order them to open up their books for the audit. DeSaglio, a Methuen Democrat and former state lawmaker, has clashed for more than a year with legislative leaders over implementation of Question 1, which authorized her office to conduct performance and financial audit of the legislature to ensure that it is following government rules and regulations. The referendum was approved in the 2024 election by nearly 72% of voters, according to official results. Lawyers for Mariano and Spilka have continued to push back against voter-approved law, repeating claims that the audit would violate separation of powers doctrine. They note that the House and the Senate already conduct regular audits of their financial operations. In a motion to dismiss the case, Campbell said DiSoglio filed the lawsuit without authorization from the Attorney General and by an attorney not designated to act in a special assistant attorney general. Campbell said the AG's office is the gatekeeper empowered to determine when, if ever, the Commonwealth's intergovernmental legal disputes require judicial resolution. Last month, Justice Dahlia Wendland rejected DiSoglio's request to appoint a special assistant attorney general to represent her office in her lawsuit to force the legislative leaders to comply with the audit, with Campbell opting to represent legislative leaders in the court fight. DiSoglio has accused Campbell of creating a conflict of interest for herself by choosing to represent legislative leaders against her office in court. Backers of the audit have filed briefs to the SJC ahead of oral arguments, urging justices to reject Campbell's motion to dismiss the lawsuit. The Attorney General's motion to strike improperly elevates executive control over an independent constitutional officer, effectively nullifying both statutory authority and decisive electoral mandate, in which approximately 72% of Massachusetts voters approved legislative audits. State Representative Alan Sylvia, a Fall River Democrat, wrote in a legal filing, "The auditor's lawsuit is the latest legal challenge over the outcome of Question 1, which authorized her office to conduct an audit of the state legislature. Lawyers for Mariano and Spilka have continued to push against the voter-approved law, repeating claims that the audit would violate separation of powers doctrine. Several Republicans, including former state lawmakers and GOP Chairman Jim Lyons, have also filed lawsuits asking the courts to force legislative leaders to comply with the referendum. As I see it, the circle of life has been broken," by C. Peter Erickson. Kent's Island is an upland preserve within the William Forward Wildlife Management Area in Newberry. Formerly a private estate, it is now managed by the State for Wildlife Conservation. The Town of Newberry Conservation Commission has been helpful in providing me with documents that are available to the general public regarding conservation management of these uplands. The jurisdiction of Newberry ConCom includes wetlands and the adjoining buffer zone, but does not extend into the forested upland. There, the state is in control. Every September into early October, I have been going to Kent's Island and returning with a basket full of black walnuts. The process of drying, husking, and cracking open their hard shells is made well worth it when finally tasting the smoky, sweet, wild nut meat inside or making it into stuffing for the Thanksgiving turkey. That is, if the creatures of the forest have not beaten me to it. Fruits, nuts, and seeds of woody plants are called mast when used for food by wildlife. All manner of wildlife, deer, squirrels, rabbits, small rodents, and many varieties of bird life depend upon mast from the native hardwoods and shrubs to make it through the winter. Upon this foundation of prey, the circle of life widens to include weasels, opossums, skunks, mink, otters, raccoons, foxes, and coyotes. MAST is critical for wildlife survival. The Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection states that among its priorities for managing Kent's Island are to improve habitat for declining populations of early successful birds, waterfowl, and upland game. And now the magnificent stand of century-old black walnut trees on Kent's Island is gone. Clear-cut, along with acorn-bearing oaks, beech, and hickory nut trees. Clear-cut along the soft-mast trees such as black cherries and crabapples. Only a few last lonely hardwoods still stand out in the open. Unprotected by their logged-off neighbors, they will remain exposed to possible wind throw. A dense stand of protective black growth, a deer stand of conifers, has been mowed down, ground up, and trucked away. I ask myself where the creatures of the forest will take refuge in winter, now that the upland forest has been hauled off. Before this winter, there was an oasis-sustaining wildlife in the middle of a salt marsh desert. What will become of the prey for the snowy owls, wintering out in the surrounding salt marsh tundra? What have horned owls and screech owls found upon returning to Kent's Island now that their nesting season has begun? The circle of life widens into the sky as other raptors, the eagles, and all manner of hawks commence their northerly migration. How will they fuel up upon arriving at this way station each spring and again every fall? Not upon the small game sustained through countless winters upon the mast that had grown on much of Kent Island. No, not next year and never again in my lifetime. Production of mast occurs between 30 and 100 years of age for most trees. Among the walnuts and oaks, peak production occurs when the trees are 100 to 125 years of age. Several weeks from now, the forests will begin leafing out. Referencing the UNH publication, Good Forestry in the Granite State, black cherry alone feeds 28 species of birds. On Kent's Island, flowering blossoms would have soon begun to bloom, attracting insect life, an essential food source for many varieties of migrating songbirds. But their canopy of native hardwoods has now been chipped up and hauled away, truckload after truckload. One cannot imagine the cost of the carbon footprint resulting from the destruction of this habitat that once provided nesting for birds and understory for both native and non-native plants. Good Forestry recommends taking appropriate measures to eliminate and control the spread of invasive plants. But how does this justify the clear-cutting of so many native hardwoods? DEP specifications state that one purpose of this particular project was to promote the regeneration of oak, hickory, and other native tree species. Mature trees will take decades longer than invasive plants to return. When I asked a couple of fellow hikers on Kent's Island, as it was the reason for this clear cut, they told me that they had heard it was to improve habitat, something about a certain bird or a moth, perhaps. But tree hugger that I am, I don't know for certain. Still, I can find no rational justification for clear-cutting the magnificent stand of black walnut trees, along with all of the other mast-producing hardwoods. Perhaps improving habitat amounts to nothing more than justification for the harvesting of lumber, cordwood, and mulch from the stand of native trees that once stood upon the crown of Kent's Island. I cannot even begin to understand the reasoning behind all of this, What I do know is that now and for the rest of my lifetime, this circle of life has been broken. C. Peter Erickson lives on Plum Island. Library Stairs Repaired Before AHS Promenade by Caitlin D., Amesbury. Those who have visited Amesbury Public Library recently may have noticed that the historic building's steps benefited from some TLC. In the past, library staff and members of its associated boards received feedback about the conditions of the stairs, said Allison Osgood, a member of the Library Board of Trustees. A number of patrons have complained about the disrepair of the stairs, and they were looking really rough. The building is a historic building, and so fixing things on it is expensive, she said. So this winter, after money was raised for the library through an annual appeal led by the trustees, the Amesbury Public Library Charitable Trust and Friends of the Amesbury Public Library, those involved began brainstorming about how to use the funding. Once the appeal was done, we had been discussing as a group on what to use the funds for, Library Director Amy Westfall said. And this project has been a lingering need for a couple of years. The front steps have been deteriorating every year, over year, slowly. And then this particular winter was, as it was on everybody, quite rough on them. So it was decided that $9,500 of the proceeds from the appeal would go to repairing the steps ahead of the Amesbury High School promenade this spring, when the students will walk down the library stairs in prom attire before the dance. The repairs took place over multiple days in March, with the deteriorating steps that had rebar showing being fixed. This was the project that bubbled up that the group felt was both a nice way to both make them safe and advance of the prom and make them a little more aesthetically pleasing as well, and as a way to give back to the community who generously donated to us, Westfall said. Now that the recently repaired steps will be ready for the promenade, an effort Westfall attributes to the donations from the community and organizations behind the appeal. I am incredibly grateful that the community came together to donate funds to the library, and I hope we all continue to do good work together, she said. And I'm so grateful for the work of my three groups. It was a lot of work that went into the appeal, and I am so grateful to them and impressed with what they were able to accomplish in such a short period of time. So it's really a testament to them. Westfall said the library has been put in a capital request for fiscal 2027 with hope of further repairing the steps through a full resealing. Pentucket students organize clothing drive. West Newbury. Three Pentucket eighth graders are leading a district-wide clothing drive to support children in need as part of their work as ambassadors for Project 351. Students Marina Bistini, Owen Potter, and Louis Sayani are serving as the district's Project 351 ambassadors this year. As part of the statewide service program, the students organized the clothing drive to benefit Cradles to Crayons, a nonprofit that provides clothing and other essentials to children in need. The drive will take place through April 10th. Donation drop-off locations are available during school hours at Bagnell Elementary School, Pentucket Middle High School, Donahue Elementary School, and Sweetser Elementary School. Donations of gently used clothing are being accepted, with a particular need for items for young children and toddlers. The collected items will be distributed through Cradles to Crayons to support children in need. Project 351 is a statewide youth leadership program that selects an eighth grader from each of Massachusetts's 351 cities and towns to participate in a year of service to their community. As part of the program, ambassadors are tasked with leading a community service project that addresses a local or statewide need. This initiative is a true example of student leadership in action, said Superintendent Justin Bartholomew. These students have demonstrated a commitment to helping others, and the district is proud to support this effort, making an impact on families in the area. Community members are encouraged to participate by donating items and spreading the word about the clothing drive. Farm Talk at First Religious Society, Newburyport. As part of Earth Day celebrations, Local Farms, a community conversation, will take place Sunday, April 19th at 1 p.m. at the First Religious Society Unitarian Universalist Meeting House at 26 Pleasant Street. The event is free and open to the public. Presenters will be area farmers, including Stacy Apple of Iron Ox Farm in Hamilton, and Andre Cantalomo of Heron Pond Farm in Southampton, New Hampshire. In addition, Vanessa Hall Johnson of Essex County Greenbelt will speak about the work of protecting local farms and providing access to farmlands for young farmers. Following the presentations and conversation, there will be a reception where other local farmers and organizations, such as Nourishing the North Shore, will share their stories. Growing food close to home, these farms deliver fresh, nutritious produce while cutting the environmental costs of long-distance transport, according to organizers. Regenerative practices such as cover cropping, composting, no tilling, and rotational grazing, along with the avoidance of herbicides, pesticides, and chemically based fertilizers, go beyond simply reducing harm. They restore soil health, improve water quality, support biodiversity, and draw carbon back into the earth. Many farms are certified for their organic practices, and some use less stringent but carefully integrated pest management techniques, organizers say. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.